You're listening to Sandy Adams Radio. Pastor Sandy is the senior pastor of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. He's currently teaching through the book of Psalms. Today, Pastor Sandy will teach through the book of Psalms, chapters 83 through 89.
Well, Psalm 83 is the last of the Psalms of Asaph. You remember the sons of Asaph were a guild of worship leaders who assisted in the spiritual life of the nation for many, many generations. Psalm 83 was probably written during the days of King Jehoshaphat. 2 Chronicles chapter 20 tells us that Judah was being threatened by a coalition of foreign armies. The Moabites and the Ammonites and the Edomites had all come together against Judah. Jehoshaphat, in response, ordered a day, a national day of fasting and prayer. After the king led them in prayer, the Spirit of God came upon a man, a common man. His name was Jahaziel. And he stood up and he prophesied a victory for the nation. You remember his famous words. He said, "Do not be afraid nor dismayed, for the battle is not yours, but God's." Jehoshaphat then employed a very strange battle strategy. He placed the musicians on the front line. He sent them out praising God. Yet the strategy so confused the army of the enemy that they turned on each other and they ended up slaughtering themselves. God won the victory and danger was averted. But here's an intriguing detail. Verse 14 of 2 Chronicles 20 gives us the pedigree of this man, Jahaziel, who prophesied. Jahaziel, the son of Zechariah, the son of Benaiah, the son of Jeiel, the son of Mattaniah, notice this, a Levite of the sons of Asaph. Could Jahaziel have been the Asaph who wrote Psalm 83? Well, perhaps. Verse 1 tells us, "Do not keep silent, O God. Do not hold your peace, and do not be still, O God. For behold, your enemies make a tumult." Literally, there's a hum in the land. There's a buzz around us. We hear an undercurrent of danger. "Those who hate you have lifted up their head. They have taken crafty counsel against your people and consulted together against your sheltered ones." Notice that. How wonderful. Notice here, the child of God is referred to as one of God's sheltered ones. Did you know that if you're a Christian, you're one of the sheltered ones? Every Christian has a father filter. That means that nothing can get to me, but that it doesn't first pass through him. And whatever comes my way, we can rest assured that God has attached to it his purpose and his plan. Well, he goes on, he says, "They have said, come, and let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be remembered no more." You know, this has been Satan's goal from the very beginning. He is the ultimate anti-Semite. In fact, Satan is the ultimate source of the world's anti-Jewish sentiment. All prejudice is evil, please understand. But Jewish hatred is especially sinister and satanic. You see, down through the centuries, Satan has tried many times to destroy the Jews. Babylon, Rome, the Turks, Hitler, Syria and Egypt, Hezbollah and Hamas. The goal has all been the same, the extermination of the Jewish nation. In 2006, Iranian President Ahmadinejad, he stated that Iran's goal was to wipe Israel off the map. Today's radical Muslim nations share in his desire. This was the goal of the Confederacy that attacked King Jehoshaphat. This will also be the desire of Satan and the Antichrist in the last days. Well, verse 5 continues. "For they have consulted together with one consent. They form a confederacy against you. The tents of Edom and the Ishmaelites, Moab and the Hagarites, Jebel, Ammon, and Amalek, Philistia with the inhabitants of Tyre, Assyria also has joined them. They have helped the children of Lot." My, Moab and Ammon were just the leaders of the conspiracy. Apparently, many other nations were on board as well. The psalmist says, deal with them now as with Midian, as with Sisera, as with Jabin at the brook Kishon. Remember what happened to Jabin? He was the guy where the woman came and gave him a big glass of milk. And he kind of got woozy. And you know what happens when you take a big glass of milk? If I have trouble going to sleep, I go in and get a big glass of milk. Because it puts you to sleep. And so Jabin starts dozing off. This lady gives him nice warm milk and cookies, you know. He thinks she's doing him a nice favor. And so he starts dozing off. And she runs in with a tent peg and boom! Just drills it right through his temple, right through his head. A happy story. And here he's saying, hey, God, these people are out to kill Israel. Deal with them as with Midian, as you did with Sisera, as you did with Jabin at the brook Kishon, who perished at Endor, who became as refuse on the earth. Asaph is recalling the past victories in the days of Deborah and in the days of Barak. And he also mentions Gideon's triumphs over the four kings of Midian. He says, make their nobles like Oreb and like Zeb. Yes, all their princes like Zeba and Zalmunna, who said, let us take for ourselves the pastures of God for a possession. God, you socked it to them once. Give it to them again. Fight them back, Lord. Oh my God, make them like the whirling dust, like the chaff before the wind. And let's drive out the enemy like a stiff breeze drives the tumbleweeds across the prairie. As the fire burns the woods and as the flame sets the mountains on fire, so pursue them with your tempest and frighten them with your storm. You say, my, isn't he praying a violent prayer? He's asking God to lash out at these people. Hey, you get people that are camped out and they're wanting to come in and pillage your family and rape your wife and daughters and slaughter your friends and neighbors. What kind of prayer are you going to pray? You're going to pray the same kind of prayer. God, fight for us. Win this victory. The psalmist here asks God to chase them with lightning bolts. Frighten them with the storm. You know, Judges recounts how the battles won by Barak and Gideon, they were aided by supernatural fireworks. Supernatural phenomena accompanied these battles. And he's asking God for similar intervention again. You know, sometimes we underestimate God's power within nature. Did you know that a single summer thunderstorm releases the same amount of energy that's generated by a megaton hydrogen bomb? And there are 50,000 such thunderstorms every day on planet Earth. God has great power that He can unleash through the forces of nature. In the Great Tribulation, God is going to aim the power of nature at Earth in an unprecedented way. The sun will scorch. The meteorites will fall. 100-pound hailstones will pelt the planet. You know, last week we had some hail land in our yard. We went outside. We had a couple of pieces that were about the size of a baseball. But that's going to be nothing compared to the Great Tribulation when God pummels the earth with 100-pound hailstones. One day, Mother Nature is going to go berserk. Well, he continues, verse 16. Fill their faces with shame that they may seek your name, O Lord. Let them be confounded and dismayed forever. Yes, let them be put to shame and perish, that they may know that you, whose name alone is Yahweh or the Lord, are the Most High over all the earth. My wife told me this week I need to start taking a breath between chapters. So, Psalm 84 is one of my favorite all-time psalms. It is a song of pilgrimage. You know, three times a year the Jews were commanded to go up to Jerusalem to worship God at the temple. Twice in the spring, in early April at Passover and in late May at Pentecost. And then once in the fall, in October, they were to go up to the temple at the Feast of Tabernacles. Psalm 84 consists of three stanzas. Stanza 1 depicts the psalmist's passion for God's presence while he's away from the temple, while he's thinking about the upcoming pilgrimage. The second stanza recounts his pilgrimage and his trip up to Jerusalem. And then the third stanza describes the peace that he finds when he enters the temple and when he is surrounded there by God's presence. Think of the psalm this way: his thirst for God, his trip to God, finally the treats of God. Psalm 84 applies to every heart that is thirsty for God. I love this psalm. The first stanza. How lovely is your tabernacle, O Lord of hosts. Understand that the tabernacle was the happening place in the Old Testament. This is where praises originated. This was where sacrifices were made on the altar. This was where worship went up and praises were sung in the courts of the temple. He says, my soul longs. Yes, it even faints for the courts of the Lord. My heart and my flesh, they cry out for the living God. In between trips up to Jerusalem, the psalmist would long for the presence of God. He would long for that sense of God's presence and awareness of God's power that he sensed there when he was in the halls of the temple, when he was mingling in the porticos, when he was standing outside within the courts of the temple. He marked off the days on his calendar until he could make his next visit. He says, even the sparrow has found a home and the swallow a nest for herself where she may lay her young. Even your altars, O Lord of hosts, my King and my God. The psalmist thinks back on the little birds that he would see that would be flying around in the top of the temple and how that they would actually make their nest up in the rafters. And he envied these birds that they could spend all day, every day, right there in the presence of God. Oh, to be like one of those little birds. He says, blessed are those who dwell in your house. Happy are those who have this experience of dwelling in God's presence. You know, the psalmist could come up to Jerusalem for the major feasts, but he could only come several times a year. He was really relegated. Most of his life was relegated there to the farm or to the shop or to wherever it was that he lived. But he knows that when he arrives, they will still be praising God. Well, stanza 2 begins, blessed is the man whose strength is in you, whose heart is set on pilgrimage, as they pass through the valley of Baca. Now the word Baca means weeping. And a pilgrimage to Jerusalem, it was tough, it was tricky. You see, the holy city was always a difficult destination. Whenever we talk of going to Jerusalem, we talk of going up to Jerusalem. Why? Because it's set in the mountains. And so wherever you were, it was always a walk uphill to get to Jerusalem. Roads led through deserts and over mountains to arrive. These roads were tight and they were windy and they were laced with danger. It was always a difficult trip to come up to Jerusalem. The psalmist longs for God, but understand, longing is not enough. He also has to come. You see, a spiritual pilgrimage requires great determination. And the same is true for you and me. All kinds of distractions will get in our way of seeking God. They will interfere in our longing for God. This is why our heart has to be set on pilgrimage. Not just a longing, but determination is a must. Yet as they journey, the pilgrims, they turn the valley of Baca, or the valley of weeping, into a spring, the psalmist says. The rain also covers it with pools. Now, Jerusalem is an uphill climb through the arid climates. And you better fill up your canteen before you embark. For even alongside today's major freeways, there are not a lot of pit stops. And yet the pilgrims' love for each other and their willingness to share it with each other as they traveled together, they made the barren desert seem like a spring of water. They would open up their canteens. They would share their resources with each other as they traveled together. And God also helped them out in their pilgrimage. We're told he sent rain, and it created little roadside pools for them. They could have water to drink as they journeyed. Verse 7, they go from strength to strength. Each one appears before God in Zion. You know, normally a trip to Jerusalem would exhaust the traveler. But the pilgrims, they're on a path to worship. And so they grow stronger and stronger with every successive mile. Everyone who began this journey ended up appearing before God. What a huge encouragement to us. This means that every person who truly seeks God will find God. All of us who set out to be a worshiper of God will make it. God will see to it. He'll bring us up, and we too will enter into God's presence. He says, O Lord God of hosts, hear my prayer. Give ear, O God of Jacob. The third stanza extols the blessings found in God's presence. He says in verse 9, O God, behold our shield, and look upon the face of your anointed, for a day in your courts is better than a thousand. Oh, the psalmist would swap 1,000 bulldog football games for just 24 hours in the presence of God. A trip to Tahiti would not be as welcomed as just one day in the presence of God. The joys, the delights, the peace, the contentment. There is no place he would rather be. There is nothing he would rather do than to just be there hanging out with God, dwelling in God's presence. He says, I would rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than to dwell in the tents of wickedness. I love this. The psalmist is saying, I'd rather just be an usher. I'd rather just be a doorkeeper in the temple and get a mere glimpse of glory whenever the door cracked open. Just be able to peek in, get a little sneak peek of God. I'd rather live that kind of a life than to have box seats for the sin games. A sneak peek at God would be better than front row seats in wicked places. He says, for the Lord God is a sun and a shield. Notice this. God is like the sun. Wow. If the sun was a basketball, the earth would be a tiny pinhead. That's the difference in size proportionally between the sun and the earth. If the sun were hollow, you'd be able to fit 1,000,000 earths inside the sun. And did you know that at the core of the sun, the temperature is 10 million degrees Fahrenheit? Amazing. The sun's surface is 5,800 degrees Fahrenheit. That's about 16 times hotter than boiling water. The barometric pressure on the sun is about 340 billion times what it is on Earth. You didn't need to know any of that about the sun in order to go out and get a tan and enjoy the sun this summer, did you? Isn't it interesting? Likewise, you don't need to know all there is to know about God to love Him and to experience Him and to have fellowship with Him and to walk in His presence and even be used by Him. All you have to do is just expose yourself to His influence. Just get a tan. Get a God tan, would you? The Lord God is a sun, and He's a shield. And the Lord will give grace and glory. No good thing will He withhold from those who walk uprightly. And this is the verse that we should have our children memorize. This is the verse that we should constantly be teaching our kids. For at some point, Satan is going to tempt your children along these very lines. He's going to tempt you along these very lines. Satan's going to come to you, and he's going to say, look at all the good things you're missing out on because you're serving God. Just give in. Just go with the flow, man, and you'll get in on the fun. Why are you missing out? Please, don't believe the enemy for a single second. Psalm 84 tells us that we'll never miss out on anything truly good if we stay in pursuit of God. He says, no good thing will He withhold from those who walk uprightly. This is the truth that our children desperately need to learn. I've been asked to add an article to a children's study Bible that's coming out in a few months. And this is what I chose to write on. No good thing will God withhold for those who walk uprightly. I want our children to know. Our children need to know. My children, your children need to know. That they won't miss out on anything good. Despite what the world tells them, the devil tells them, their friends tell them, they won't miss out on anything good if they'll just stay in the will of God and continue to love God. He has great blessings in store for them. Well, finally, verse 12. O Lord of hosts, blessed is the man who trusts in You. Oh, how the psalmist would envy us. I mean, he longed for God's presence. He traveled miles on foot across rugged terrain just to be there. And you and I, we have access to God's throne of grace 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Incredibly, we have the presence of God within us. How the psalmist would be envious of you and me. Psalm 85 was written during the days of Zerubbabel, the man who led the Jews back to Judah from Babylonian captivity. The Jews, you remember, they returned to rebuild their homeland, but it wasn't easy. The temple, the walls, they were all in ruins, and Zerubbabel encountered great opposition. Psalm 85 is a song of new beginnings. It's a mixture of gratitude and grief, of agony and ecstasy. Psalm 85 attests to the fact that starting over is never easy. Perhaps you're starting over tonight. It may be hard, but it will be worth it. Psalm 85 teaches us. It begins, "Lord, you have been favorable to your land. You have brought back the captivity of Jacob." Now notice God here calls his people Jacob. Often he calls them Judah, which means praise. Sometimes he'll call them Israel, which means prince. But here the psalmist calls the flock of God Jacob, which means scoundrel. You remember Jacob. He had a seedy past. You know, he was a shameful character. And God wounded Jacob. You remember after the episode at Bethel, he walked around with a limp. And God's people now are limping back to Jerusalem. They're weak. They've been shamed. You know, they've been drugged and taken into exile. They've been punished for their sin. Now they know that if there's any hope for them, they're going to have to lean on God's grace. That's probably a good place to be. Verse 2, "You have forgiven the iniquity of your people. You have covered all of their sin. You have taken away your wrath. You have turned from the fierceness of your anger." What comforting words. Yeah, you blew it. You're Jacob. You're a scoundrel. You've been taken into exile. You've had a shameful past. But now God's forgiving you. And he's turned from his anger. You got a fresh start. What hopeful words. "Restore us, O God of our salvation, and cause your anger toward us to cease. Will you be angry with us forever? Will you prolong your anger to all generations? Will you not revive us again that your people may rejoice in you? Show us your mercy, Lord, and grant us your salvation." I will hear what God the Lord will speak, for he will speak peace to his people and to his saints, and let them not turn back to folly. Notice, fresh starts begin when God speaks. And the psalmist is hungry to hear. Do you have a hunger to hear from God? To hear God speak into your life? You know, he created the universe by the word of his power. We talked this morning how he speaks through words. His creative work today always begins when he speaks. Are we listening for God to speak? "Surely his salvation is near to those who fear him, that glory may dwell in our land." When Zerubbabel returned to the land, everything was in ruins, but his goal was clear, that glory may dwell in our land. He had high expectations. And even though you may have been coming from ruins and coming from bondage and coming out of shameful places, coming back to the Lord, hey, you should have high hopes and great expectations. For God's desire for your life is the same, that glory may dwell in your land. Verse 10, here's the one snag that you have to overcome. "Mercy and truth have met together. Righteousness and peace have kissed. Truth shall spring out of the earth, and righteousness shall look down from heaven." Now here's the snag in man's salvation, in man's reconciliation to God. God said that the penalty for sin was death. Thus, for God to be true to his word and righteous in his works, man must die. Yet God also wants to show us mercy.
Every emotion you can think of is found in the book of Psalms. From exuberant praise to devastating despair and everything in between. The authors of these beautiful songs poured their hearts out to God. They sang because of sorrow and because of gratitude in the middle of terror and at the end of trials. Their words are recorded to aid our own expressions of emotion and remind us to ultimately turn to God, no matter the circumstances. We're glad you tuned in today to Sandy Adams Radio to join us in this examination of the Book of Psalms. We'd love to hear how God has been using His Word in your own life. So please take a moment to connect with us. You can call us at 770-736-2828. Again, that's 770-736-2828. If you want to hear today's teaching again, or perhaps share it with someone you feel needs to hear it, let us know when you call. Just mention today's date and we'll send you a CD with the message in its entirety. We've also archived many of Pastor Sandy's messages at sandyadams.org. Just click on Sermons in the menu or scroll down the page to find a list of all the books of the Bible Pastor Sandy has shared messages from. You can even read Pastor Sandy's teaching notes. That's all for today, but join us next time for another edition of Sandy Adams Radio.